GNC 495. It's Monday, July 20th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Everyone, I got a great show for you. A very rare early recording here from Honolulu. It is still daylight. Got a good one for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey, I want to welcome you to the show. My name is Todd Cochran. Make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. If you're new to the show, hey, you definitely want to get subscribed immediately. That can be done through the iTunes, Zune Marketplace, or the RSS feed on the website. That will assure that you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following, well, actually, get the show delivered to your media player. And if you sign up for the newsletter, that will get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox. So the show notes can be found, or actually the newsletter can be found via the newsletter link on the website. And I get signed up for that as well. And that way you'll be one of the lucky few or thousands that get the actual newsletter. Each time I do the podcast, contains all the links to the show, that all the stuff I talk about today. So it's kind of weird here, folks. It's early. I'm normally dragging, barely getting in here to get the show done at 8 o'clock at night in Honolulu time. It's actually 1 p.m. in Hawaii, which is very odd. Now, I know many of you will listen to the show, you know, depending on when you pick it up, morning, night, or evening. But it's kind of weird to actually be daylight and doing the show. Weather here in Honolulu today is absolutely beautiful. And the trades are up and just almost like howling. It's really, really windy. So my prop that I have behind me that blocks the sunlight coming directly into the room. We'll see if that gets blown down, because I've got the window cracked a little bit, and it's been rattling back there a few times. We'll see if it stays up. Well, I hope everyone had a great weekend. I had a very productive one here. We'll talk about that, and I'm being facetious when I say that I had a productive weekend, but I spent the large majority of the weekend doing homework. I, like a nutcase, decided to go ahead and sign up for some more college classes, and I am taking some math classes, and this math teacher is sadistic. I'm not kidding you. I had about, I would say 50 questions that he had in the homework spread amongst 14 chapters, and I quite literally pulled my hair out all weekend doing that. And I basically sent him a message. I'm like, you know, I've been in a lot of college classes and taken a lot of stuff over the past few years. Never have I spent like 20 hours doing homework on one class. And I says, if this doesn't get any better, I'm going to drop. You know, what do you have in for us the rest of the semester? So I'm waiting for a response, but not worth 20 hours of my time doing homework, that's for sure. I like going to school, but that was borderline, actually not borderline, beyond ridiculous. But, you know, math teachers, they are what they are, and the curriculum is set, so we'll see what the response is. I'm sure he really cares about my schedule. Otherwise, nothing else too much going on around here. We've been basically trying to play catch up on a bunch of stuff. So all's pretty quiet in the Cochran household. Did have a birthday over the weekend, so I had a little bit of a mini birthday party here in the house for my lovely wife. Now, one thing I've been have had on the website at Geek News Central for a very, very long time is a link where you can pick up free magazines, white papers, and so forth. And that I haven't given that a lot of press. And I thought I would today. I added a banner to the third column of the website. You guys will see it over there. And check that out when you guys get a chance. There's some pretty cool periodicals, white papers that you can get access to through that. If you feel something else over there is worthy, you know, drop me a line back at geeknews@gmail.com and tell me what you found as you get it and start picking up that type of stuff there. Also, I should have brought this up in the actual talking about the weekend work of really kind of doing all the math homework. What are you guys using today for a scientific calculator? Now, part of my problem was this weekend was that I broke out my trusted TI-36. Now, this is a this is a dinosaur when it comes to scientific calculators. It was one that I used a number of years ago, and I could tell about third of the way in this weekend that I was going to have to make a trip to either online to get a new what are you guys using? What are your kids using? Are they using TI-84? What are they using? Are they using an online program for trig, algebra, calculus, all that stuff? What are they using these days? Because I am definitely behind the times. And that was part of the problem too. So doing everything longhand on paper was not fun. Okay, make sure you get over to techpodcast.com. We've got a number of shows over there that are putting out a weekly show on our TPN Weekly. And what that really entails is giving you a sample of shows that are over at techpodcast.com without you having to subscribe to a number of shows. So make sure you check that out. We also knocked out a roundtable this weekend. Andy and I decided really kind of at the ninth hour to knock that out, and we did that Saturday morning. I was actually working on editing everything up, and I've got it all ready to push, so hopefully after I get done with the show this afternoon, I'll push this weekend's recording up on techpodcast.com. You'll get access to it. But we had pretty good discussion, a lot of Twitter tools, talking about the state of podcasting, the state of technology, went over a bunch of different articles, so I think you'll find the conversation that Andy and I had was pretty good. So we'll have that up there for you later today. Blog World Expo, have not had a chance to work on my presentation any more than I did last week, but still looking for kind of a rough feel for those of you that are podcasters listening to the show, how many of you are going to be going out to Blog World Expo, a new media expo happening in October. I hope that you'll come out. I know that my team is going out. We'll be there in force, have a booth and the whole nine yards. So definitely consider coming out. It'll be a great time. If nothing else, it'll be Vegas, you know. That's the best part, and a great time to kind of get it cools off a little bit in October in Vegas. It's not as hot, at least I hope, and should be a good show at the Blog World Expo. And you find that at blogworldexpo.com. Show 500. Wow, we're fast approaching. This is show number 495, so we're just a few short shows away from show 500. And continuing in my quest here to basically... one of our big giveaways for show number 500 is going to be giving money to a needy family. And we're looking for submissions from Geek News Central listeners. If you feel that your family is in need and have seen a little bit of a economic impact due to the economy, you'll want to send me an email to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Basically, you know, don't have, and I won't read your names on the air, so we'll keep everyone anonymous. I don't want to embarrass anyone, but we're looking to put some cash in your pocket, and the only way you can do that is by dropping me an email, let me know what's going on in your life, and sharing with you, and I hope that you put a few tidbits in there to prove that you are a GNC listener, because I've gotten a couple entries so far that have come from... I can almost tell they have never listened to the show, but someone basically said, go over and submit something to this guy. So you guys can do that by just, you know, writing something a little personal. If you've listened to the show for a while, you'll know what stuff to put in there, and gives me a clue that you're actually part of the Ohana here. Podcast Madness. Make sure you get over podcastmadness.com. Matter of fact, I didn't bring the link up, but there's a number of new sites this week that are giving out coupon codes, which will allow you to make more entries to win cool prizes during our giveaway at the end of the month. We did hear from our there might be a voicemail from our winner. We've got from last show when I gave away the Dynamo label writer. We heard from our listener that won. He's in Sweden. So I think what I'm going to be doing, instead of shipping this thing to Sweden, we're going to be sending him a cash coupon, maybe to the iTunes store or something like that. I'll work with him in equivalent value. But the shows this week that are giving away, basically giving up coupon codes, Caffeination Podcast, The Mike Tech Show, My Geek Week, and Snark Infested Waters. You can find that information out over at podcastmadness.com. There'll be some cool prizes for us to give away as a collective at the end of the month. But our local winner here did send me an email, so I'm in contact with him, which is good. All right, let me go ahead and look at my notes here, make sure I've gotten through everything before we get into the regular tech news today. We've got a good sampling of tech for you. So we should have the normal flow of stuff, and hopefully we'll get you out of here on our normal time frame that we normally do for the show. For those of you that are joining me at this weird hour on Ustream, I want to welcome you to the Geek News Central podcast. Make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Oh, as a side note, and Angelo, I think, is probably dutifully working away at this right now. I know he's in the chat. We're going to have a new version of PowerPress being released this afternoon. And this is a pretty cool release because we've added some features for those of you that are doing a lot of video. We've got some video embed features built into PowerPress now, along with a whole bunch of other little bug fixes, some new enhancements to it. So if any of you have questions actually on Ustream, you can do that right there in chat and ask Angelo if you have any questions. He'll probably be here to hang out. But for those of you that are listening via audio show, just go over to blueberry.com/PowerPress, and you can get the new information on the newest, latest, and greatest courses. They'll be in the plugins section on WordPress at the WordPress site. Okay, what else have I got here? Let's see here. Yep, of course, let's take care of a little business. If you'll notice on the website, there's a link to a promo page that has promo codes for GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy being a longtime sponsor here at Geek News Central. We're always looking for ways for you to save money and put money really back in your pocket, stuff that you don't have to give someone else. And by checking out the promo codes that I have available for GoDaddy, you can save a lot of money. So the link will be in the show notes to that. It's also on the website. If you use the promo code, see, that's the thing about doing a show in the middle of the day. The phone rings when and I have really no control over it because no one ever calls me they call me in a cell. They don't call me on a landline. But so the wife just picked it up. But anyway, make sure you check out GoDaddy. You can save 10% by using the promo code Todd. Geek5 will save you 15% off orders $20 or more. Of course, ComSale will save you money on .coms. And one of the cool things is that code works on renewals as well. And don't forget to check out all the services GoDaddy has. They've got a lot of great products over there. And again, longtime sponsor here and is the power behind the Geek News Central website and runs on a dedicated server there at GoDaddy.com. All right, of course, GoToMeeting. With our roundtable this last weekend, Andy and I put on a good presentation using GoToMeeting. And, you know, the cool thing about it is you can work and meet from anywhere with GoToMeeting. You can cut travel cost. You don't have to get out of, you know, you sit right there in the office and, you ring someone up and say, hey, let's do this right online. And you can do it. You can improve communications because everyone's on the same page as you're walking through different types of presentations. And you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime. It's easy. 2 minutes is all it takes to set the application up. And attendees don't need to sign up. You give them a link and they join the meeting session. And they don't even have to waste money on long distance or airtime on their mobile phone. They just connect via the voice IP service and they're good to go. And it's real-time sharing and collaboration between multiple parties. So go over to GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day trial, courtesy here of Geek News Central and, of course, GoToMeeting. So thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at GNC and, of course, GoDaddy as well. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the regular commentary tonight on tech. That's what you all have came for, not to hear me dabble along. And actually, you know, it's kind of funny when we get it. I can tell when there's a new listener to the show because the new listener always says, Todd, quit talking so much on the personal stuff at the beginning of the show. And then after a few shows, they stop. Now that is going to become annoying. All All right. Yeah, well, see, they finally had it. They finally grabbed it. And that's one of the reasons why I don't like doing a day show, because there's too many distractions. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the tech. And let's start off with a article that Ace Adulter has talking about IE8's growth. And, you know, Ace is kind of interesting because, you know, Ace works with Firefox. And he's not often willing to give IE any types of props. But he has got a post here talking about how the growth of IE8 has really exploded since its release. And he's starting to... They're tracking that right now IE8, as far as the Internet Explorer browser share, is around 20%. But what's amazing, as we talked about in a previous show, IE6 continues to hang out right now, hanging in at about 15% of the market share, then IE7 up there around 35%. Now, what's a little confusing here, Ace, is that doesn't equal 100 in my book, but he's got a pretty good explanation of this, and... I'll have this link up in the show notes for you. You can check it out if you want more information on basically what's going on with the Internet Explorer growth if you are an Internet Explorer user. And by my stats on Geek News Central, about 80% of you that are visiting the website come in via Firefox. So that tells me that you're all pretty tech savvy and have moved away from Internet Explorer. Those of you that are BlackBerry users, good news, especially if you're a Mac owner. There's going to be a BlackBerry Desktop Manager coming to Mac in September. You're going to be able to control, update, do functions with syncing with your calendar, contacts, notes, and tasks. And I guess I didn't realize this, but I guess this was not something that was native for Mac users already. And this is pretty big news today. So those of you that have a BlackBerry right now and are Mac users, I'd love to hear from you guys because I don't have a BlackBerry. I've never owned one. What has been your limitation in using the BlackBerry with a Mac, or has there been, or what's exciting with this release? And love to hear your comments on this, of course. And you can always send comments on today's show at geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. Right over on i4u news at i4u.com, they've got a posting up of a new wireless photo frame. Now, wireless photo frames are a dime a dozen. And really, I'm looking for stuff that differentiates photo frames from one another. And any of these photo frames are connected to any of the type of the social networks or Flickr sites or anything like that, that kind of gets me excited and I pay interest to. So Toshiba has introduced three new frames today, an 8-inch and a 10-inch frame. They're going to be priced between $179 and $229. And the frame, it comes with what's called a frame channel account, which you can upload images and link favorite photos, music, and videos from popular sites like Flickr, PhotoBucket, and Facebook. And currently, I guess there's about 1,000 channels as well, because you can not only will you get photos, but you can subscribe to magazines, sports, baseball scores. Basically, it kind of keeps you updated. It's something you'd keep on your desk. And not only will it give you regular photos, but both the touch of a button, you can get the latest sports news, sports scores, that type of stuff. So I think this is pretty cool. And they don't talk about any type of subscription price with this, which is good because many of these photo frames like this that have these additional services, they want to charge you $20 a month. This thing has got connects via your Wi-Fi device, so pretty smart on Toshiba on this. We'll see how much of a bang it makes, and I might even pick one up myself based upon what I've read so far on this. Okay, if you are, you know, if you're financially really strapped and you want a netbook that is tied to a wireless provider, it really is a great time right now because we're seeing Sprint, we're seeing AT&T, we're seeing different carriers going out and subsidizing netbooks around the country. AT&T is subsidizing a set of netbooks right now. I guess they're going to be doing Acer Aspire. The Acer Aspire 1, the Dell Mini 10, and the Lenovo S10 are going to be launched. You're going to be able to pick up the netbook at a very low price, and then which will be essentially has locked into a 2-year contract with AT&T And basically, it comes with the wireless built in. And this is kind of a way to get a netbook on the cheap, although you will have that monthly charge. So I think we're going to start seeing more of this. I know many of you are big fans of netbooks. I'm not particularly one of them, as you well know. But this is a good way to, I guess for a better reason, get a netbook for free in the sense that the netbook is free, but the service isn't. Now, what do you guys travel with USB sticks? I know in my computer bag, I usually have 3 or 4 sticks thrown in there. I have them labeled. They're for different purposes. One's for media, one's for documents. And basically, the reason I keep them organized that way is just, you know, way I organize stuff is kind of in compartments. And but today I'm seeing this new Kingston 256 gig USB flash drive, and I'm thinking to myself, this thing is, that's as big as, you just think about that, 256 gig USB drive. This is the world's largest right now, and that's remarkable. Now, the price tag on this, let me scroll down here. I thought I saw like $500 or something like that was the price on this thing. It's definitely not cheap, but you could carry, you know, this is a way to carry, instead of carrying a external hard drive, you know, you just buy a couple of these USB sticks and talk about a space saver. It's pretty amazing. 256 gigs on a USB drive. So the data transfer rate is not too bad on it. 20 megabits per second. You can read up to 10 megs per second. It's got some security software in, so the password's the information. And but isn't that amazing? 256 gigs on a USB stick. I was pretty surprised to see that. I really was. But maybe I don't need to travel with 4 or 5 sticks anymore. Maybe I just need to get one of those. But that price tag, I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about an article that one of our contributing editors over at Geek News Central wrote. And when I read the title of this, I was like, wow, what are you saying? And it basically said, why you need to lie to be secure. And this is going to go into a little more about talking about some things that happened with Twitter. And I guess we could probably get into that as well. As all of you know, we talked on the last show about the hacker that was able to gain access to essentially Twitter's infrastructure, their document infrastructure, and a follow-on article that appeared this weekend, which is an absolute amazing read, which I'll have up in the show notes for you, was basically a reconstruction of how he did the hack. And it was really simple. What this guy did was he went out and researched every employee, kind of got a feel for what their usernames were, got some information on them, was trying to do some things to basically hack the account. And what he found was that the gal had a Hotmail account that she had at one time. What happens is when you reset your password with Gmail, it will give you a hint on where it's sending the reset password to. And it's not very hard. It's like some dot, 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 and at, then it says maybe the first letter of the domain name. Well, anyone with, you know, half a common sense can count the number of dots and figure out, hey, that's probably a Hotmail account. So when he went over to Hotmail to try to kind of get in that way, turns out that the Hotmail account that this gal had had expired and had been canceled. So he reinitiated the account. The name was still available, set it up in his own name, went back to Gmail, was able to have the password reset for her Gmail account sent to the Hotmail account that he was now in control of. He got that information. So now he says, okay, I'm going to go back to Gmail. Now that I've got her password, because I've reset the password, she's going to know something's up. So I need to hurry up and find out what her password was for her Gmail account. So he did some searching through her Gmail and found like 4 or 5 email messages where the person had done a password reset, and the passwords were all the same. So of course he said, okay, if that person's used that password for 4 or 5 other accounts on other services, why don't I just go ahead and I'll reset the Gmail account to the password that was in these emails, and then I'll sit back and see if the account's still accessible. Well, after a short period, he was able to log in. He had seen there had been activity in the account, and he essentially, at that point, owned the account. Now, once you're in a Gmail account, if you have Google Docs tied to that, it's just, you know, it's all underneath the same password. Generally, people use the same passwords across multiple sessions in Google. So he was able to go right in to the Twitter corporate doc shares on Google Docs and score. He hooked everything up. And this is where this article back on Geek News Central comes in, talking about why you need to lie to be secure. Because how many of you have filled out the password reset hints, like, okay, what city did you grow up in, or where were you born, or what was the name of your first pet, or what was the name of your first teacher? Well, you know, some of that stuff is not too hard to figure out. If you Google and really do research on an individual, you can find pretty quickly a lot of data on someone. And so it won't take too long to be able to learn those reset passwords. And I'm just checking something here. Someone said I went off the air, and I'm still on the air. So, you know, you go through it, and basically our email is really kind of the gateway to everything we have. How many of you delete every time you get a password reset via email, delete the email? How many of you actually do that? Well, I don't do that every time. So, I went back through my emails, and I did. So here's the crux of the story, folks. What is being said is when you go out and you set these automated systems to actually give you the hint of what your password is, you need to basically take some consideration into the fact that maybe you shouldn't put the real information in there. So what month were you born? Maybe you need to pick something arbitrary to, you know, have as not your default. You know, what city were you born in? Make it different in all these reset systems to better protect you. It really made me sit back and think, you know, I've done a pretty good job in using different passwords on different sites, but not all the time. There's been some that, you know, I've used the same password on multiple sites, which is not good. So pay attention to that. Definitely think about the security questions you're being asked. Think about where you're sending your reset passwords to. If that account that you're sending that reset to is still active or not. Because I got to think, I said, where am I sending my reset passwords to? And I went and looked, and luckily all those email accounts were still alive. But it wouldn't take too hard, just went a little bit of work to find information that they shouldn't on you, and essentially reset your passwords, and then basically have access to everything that you've ever typed or said or done or have online, and thousands of emails would not be good, would not. All right, let's go ahead and move on here to an article over on Gizmodo talking about the Palm Pre. This is a pretty critical article, and those of you that have the Pre, I'd like to hear your weigh-in on this. There's 23 things Palm could be improved by software, and talks about some changes and suggestions that people are making to the interface on the Pre. And I was looking through some of this stuff, and I was like, oh, that's actually would be a good feature on the iPhone, because some of this stuff doesn't exist on it as well. So I have this link up in the show notes if you're a Pre user. I don't hear from too many. I know there's a number of you that have Pre's that are part of the audience, but I don't hear from you very often. Look through this. Are these features that you think you would want, or do you have any additional suggestions for the folks at Palm? Big article about AT&T and having essentially some issues over the past, week or so, where people's digital voicemail was not being delivered. And I don't know about you, but there are times when I'm in the middle of meetings, recording the show, basically asleep because people call me at 3 o'clock in the morning because they're up at 9 a.m. in the East Coast. They think everyone lives on the East Coast. They try to call me in the middle of the night, where essentially all my, you know, I send stuff straight to voicemail. And I was, you know, I usually get a fair amount of phone calls. So I was wondering if I was underneath this issue that was affecting many people, where the voicemail system on AT&T was shut down, not even working. And can you imagine? AT&T did not send out a notice to anyone saying, hey, we're having problems with digital voicemail. We encourage you to go ahead and dial into voicemail manually. They didn't send out an email, but apparently sometime before July 3rd, and for nearly 2 weeks, there were people that have been without a voicemail. It just wasn't working, was broke. Now, AT&T, I noticed, likes to send me little emails on tips on how I can use my iPhone, and they send me little text messages and stuff. But would you have thought that they would have not sent a message to their customers, letting them know that a critical part of their service was in op? It just blows my mind that they would not have done that. And, you know, you can miss appointments. You can miss important calls from the wife. Or, you know, there's all kinds of things you can miss if you aren't able to get your voicemail. So what I did is I logged into the voicemail manually. Now, all you got to do, and if you don't know how to do that on your iPhone, is dial your own telephone number. And that will bring you right into the voicemail system of your phone. If you do it from your phone, it'll log in automatically, and you'll get access to whatever is there or isn't there. What I did find interesting was that there was a lot of voicemail in there that I had deleted. You can actually go into, if you've deleted a voicemail that you did not want to, off the iPhone, it's still actually stored on the AT&T system. You can actually log in and get access to it and undelete stuff. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because there was actually one voicemail that I did delete by accident that I thought was forever gone. But this is just another thing, basically a stab in the heart on why Apple should consider other carriers when they're getting ready to this termination with the AT&T next year. We hope is a termination, and then, or not a termination, but not exclusive with AT&T anymore. We hope that they move into Verizon and some other carriers as well. So we'll watch the experience. But if you haven't been getting a voicemail and you were expecting to, you may want to actually dial in and make sure that you haven't missed anything. All right, today was probably the first time that I have responded to a banner ad in many, many months. I was actually downloading a new version of Pigeon, and that's the client that I use that allows me to log into multiple IM chats at once. And there was this advertisement said that was for a site called Splunk. And so I'm wondering if any of you are familiar with Splunk. It's basically for those of you that have servers, those of you that watch what's going on with your operating systems, and basically watching the logs and so forth. Have any of you actually used this application from Splunk.com, Splunk.com? It says on their website here, Splunk is IT search, navigate, alert, and report on all your IT data in real time, logs, configurations, messages, traps, alerts, script code, metrics, and more. If a machine can generate it, Splunk can eat it. So I'm kind of curious, any of you using this? It looks pretty interesting. And again, it's the first banner ad that I have actually clicked on in many, many, many months. But looking for some feedback from some of the Ohana out there, if any of you have if you're dialed into this company at all or know about this product or service. Of course, a lot of coverage about Apollo 11. And some photos have been released again today by NASA showing some pictures that I've never seen before. A pretty cool one that was up on the Gizmodo website was a picture of Neil Armstrong that was taken from high above on the lunar lander. And you can actually see his face in the picture, which is, you know, usually the glare of the helmet you can't see. But it's such an angle that the glare is not an issue. And you can actually see his face in this actual image. Pretty cool. Anyway, the link will be up to this in the show notes. There's just all kinds of stuff all over the net today. You couldn't have missed it if you were online at all. All right, Kazaa, they got a huge, hefty $150 million lawsuit judgment against them from the good old folks at the RIAA in the music industry. But Kazaa is rising from the dead, and they have vowed that they're going to emerge as a company that is going to have an actual viable service. And there's a couple of folks behind the relaunch of the website and service, and they're going to have for pay music and so forth. So we'll see what happens with that. Did they have the $150 million to pay, or is this just an attempt to raise money to pay the $150 million? That probably is the question. But they're going to have a basically all-you-can-eat service, $20 a month. and you can download as many songs as you like. Now, what is not said here is whether or not the site is owned by the same people that owned it before, if it's changed hands. That is yet to be seen, but this was an article over on the Sydney Morning Herald. I have the link up to you in the show notes. All right, Mac users, how many of you are using Time Machine? I'm sure a great number of you are, right? Well, there's a product out called Time Warp, and I kind of had to giggle over this because this has been available for PCs for a long time, even though I'm sure there's probably a comparable product for Macs available, but I just didn't know about it. But Time Warp is an off-site backup that complements Time Machine. Time Warp will actually take your Time Machine backup, it'll smash it down and ship it off to S3 for storage off-site. And for those of you that are Mac users that have never used S3, please be aware, if you're going to go over there and you're going to pick up this product, I think it's like $40, and you can find it from jumpingbeansoftware.com, is that the price for actually hosting it on S3 will cost you 15 cents per gig per month for storage. It's going to cost you 10 cents per gig to back the data into S3, or 17 cents a gig to restore data from S3. So I have a large amount of data stored on S3. I think my monthly storage bill is about $23 or $24 a month. So I've got quite a bit of stuff over there. But it's my opinion that if my, you know, if something tragic was to happen, in other words, my house burned down or whatever it may be, that I would know that the data that I find to be very critical is in the cloud. Now, of course, I have some additional backup with hard drives that get rotated in and out of a safety deposit box. But I tell you, it makes me feel a lot better if I, you know, if I get a little lax and I miss going to the bank and actually swapping out the hard drives for a couple of months, I know that my data is over on S3. And but anyway, this is a good way for you to get off-site storage. You know, another thing you can do too is that, you know, if you don't want to pay the storage for S3 and you want to have off-site storage, you know, take a hard drive and fill it up with your data, and if you are allowed, take it to your place of employment, stick it in your desk drawer. And if you can lock it up, of course, that would be good, because you definitely wouldn't want someone from work walking off with your stuff. But, you know, find a place to have some off-site storage, even if it's you got a trusted buddy you can swap hard drives with, because nothing worse, and I've seen it happen just recently to a good friend of mine that lives in Virginia, house burned down. And the hard drive and the machine was in the center of where the majority of the heat was with the fire, and nothing was recoverable. He lost everything and had no off-site storage. So, you know, the chances of that happening are, of course, very, very small for probably the audience here that that listens, the audio portion of the audience. But let's be realistic. It can happen. And if it does, it's not a good day, irregardless of the consequences of fire. But at least you will know that you'll have your data backed up someplace. Over interesting article over on GigaOm talking about the hidden cost of cloud bandwidth charges. And this is this kind of ties in a little bit to the last article. But this is more in relation to what Microsoft is doing in moving their different stuff to the cloud in their Windows Azure platform. What they're finding is that they feel, at least the writer of this article feels, that the large majority of the profits are going to be made with these types of cloud services, especially for Microsoft and other companies that are bringing on cloud computing, whether it be access through, you get access to Windows Online or however it may be, that you're going to pay in a per gigabyte price to utilize that service. And, of course, they're going to tack on a surcharge. And they really, you know, he did some quick math here based upon, I guess, 100,000 users. And 100,000, he felt if Microsoft can build Azure to accumulate charges for all customers, applications sending 100,000 gigs a day, which really would be a very obtainable number by Microsoft, that it's going to reap them approximately $151,000 in gross profit just off the bandwidth alone. So I think all of us, as we start moving into more cloud computing and have access to these online apps, we're going to be incurring new charges that we never did, and we'll have to look at those costs as time progresses. But, you know, you look at my Amazon S3 bill. I never had that 5 years ago. But it's, you know, I budget that into my budget now because I know that I need to have offsite storage of my, all of my media. Of course, I'm a big fan of T-Mobile still. I still have the rest of my family on T-Mobile. I'm the only one that deserted and went to AT&T. But T-Mobile wants to really expand their utilization of a program they held called My Faves. Those of you that are T-Mobile customers, you probably know what My Faves is. It's where you can pick a number of people that actually will be kind of in your inner circle. If you call them, they call you. You get unlimited text and voice calls to them. There's no basically, it's a free call. And for my wife and I, that worked out real good because I had the kids on that. I had her and I in a circle of people that mostly her friends that were on T-Mobile. They could talk back and forth for hours, not incur any charges that. But they're going to be pushing into My Faves, into a social networking hub. And for those of you that T-Mobile subscribers, I'm sure you're going to hear more on this. But, you know, I think that's one of those things that you kind of set and forget. It's not something I'm going to go back and revisit every day, so I really don't understand their full purpose on this. You know, you go through and you can online, you can pick who you want to be in your My Faves list, and you just enter the numbers and so forth. I'm not something that I'm going to go just change on a daily basis. It's something I'm going to, you know, again, I'm going to set up and forget it. So I don't really understand why they're going to build this into a social networking hub. So we'll see what happens. But from a launch or from an integration perspective, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. More and more data every day is coming out that's talking about how the future of the internet is going mobile. Lots of charts, lots of predictions, lots of studies into it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the speed. And I will be the first to admit that there's nothing like being at home on my broadband connection when I'm traveling in different hotels and I'm stuck on hotel speed or I have to dial into EVDO. You know, I long for my even what I consider to be a slow connection here in Hawaii because it's just that much faster. But as we overcome some of these hurdles in the next 3-4 years, we hope, where the speed actually starts increasing and becoming you know, a viable connection for us to use mobile apps, I could see where things will go definitely a lot more mobile. And with the number of, you know, people that everyone has a cell phone, let's just be honest about it. You know, even kids, they have phones. And the more the apps are built into these phones, the more people are going to be using them. And I think we're going to become more of we're going to start catching up to Japan. As a matter of fact, there was a good article about Japan and their mobile network today. We'll talk a little bit about later in the show. But I think we're going to see more and more stuff move to mobile apps. And but I think what's going to lag is our demand right now is for speed. And we're, you know, that's always the issue, right? We're always wanting more speed. Things are never fast enough, and so we'll see over time if that becomes the case. But they're predicting a big swing by 2013. So what do you guys think? Think we're going to move more and more to mobile? Depending, you know, it doesn't mean if you have an iPhone, any phone, you're going to be doing more mobile, more actual computing applications on a mobile phone. And I'm not talking about doing WordPress. You know, maybe simple emails and that type of stuff are going to move more to mobile devices. All right, kind of covered already, but I got an article up about Scobalizer. And he's basically talking about real password security and some of the stuff that they ran into with the folks over there at Twitter. I'll have that linked up in the show notes. He's got some good topics here, along with some backup advice as well, some issues he had with a Mac that went down. And the same thing I'm telling you, just like you have fire, you can lose a hard drive to mechanical failure and lose data. And he's got some information on that. New website that I haven't been familiar with before, and it's actually a PR site. Did not add it to my permanent read list. But if you're a Twitter junkie and you want to get every useful information out of Twitter that you can, they've got a list of 10 things. And this might be good for those of you that have clients that are, you know, using Twitter. Give you some, basically a breakdown of some demographics and how Twitter's being used today by those that are actually actively using it. So I have that link up in the show notes. I don't need to tell the rest of you what that's all about because most of you already know. So I have that up. Over on Robin Good's website, He's got a breakdown of online meeting and appointment schedulers. It's a comparative guide and review of the best collaborative tools. And I thought this was pretty cool. He breaks down a variety of different schedulers and meeting applications. Pretty cool. And this is all about scheduling and keeping organized. Some of the stuff here, of course, was GenBook, Google Calendar, Doodle, Meet-O-Matic, TimeBridge, Presido, Time to Meet, Meeting Wizard, When is Good, Schedule Once, ClickBook. Some of these names you may be familiar with already. I have a link up in the show notes. I run my life on a very tight schedule, and I love having a appointment schedule that just is completely organized. And I was looking through these, seeing if I could find something that was a little bit better than what I'm currently using. And so far, a lot of these do a lot of the same functionality. So I guess it has a lot to do with cost. As I'm looking at some of these, and some of them are $19.95 to anywhere from free to $19.95 a month. And in times when you're trying to watch your budget, obviously free is good. And, you know, Google Calendar is free, and it works well. It integrates with stuff that I'm using today. And but some of these other features offer some pretty cool additional features that some of these other online applications don't. So I have this link up to you. You can check it out. All right, the RIAA has finally admitted that the use of DRM was bad and that DRM is dead. Jonathan Lamley, the chief spokesperson for the RIAA, declared DRM dead when he was asked about the RIAA's view on DRM for an upcoming SC Magazine article. DRM is dead, isn't it? Lamey said, referring to the DRM-less iTunes store and other online outfits that now offer music without restrictions. Wasn't it just like a couple years ago that RI was claiming that the DRM was the only way, our way or the highway? Well, I guess this is one that they have obviously lost. And nice to see them lose a few. Over on Forbes, and I don't know how long we're all going to be able to enjoy Forbes magazine with it being on the, or even Forbes online with it being on the auction block. It may go to the way of syndicated websites at some point. But Forbes has got an article here talking about Apple earnings and basically Apple's secret weapon. And as I was thinking about this, I said, you're right. The article is entitled Apple's Secret Weapon, Your Mom. And I have to admit, when I went to buy my iPhone, I went into the Apple Store on an odd time. I went in the morning. I'm normally, if I go in the Apple Store, it's usually in the afternoon or in the evenings. It's very rarely that I'm in there on a weekday in the daytime. It just isn't a place that I'm not at the mall at that time. And the only reason I was over there was my wife was having a procedure that day. And she was going to be, basically ready to be picked up after 12:30. And I had some spare time on my hands, so I went over to the Apple Store. And when I was in there, it was full of moms. And I'm kind of like, what are all these moms doing here? And they were all getting lessons on the different applications. And, you know, I thought that was kind of weird, and I just kind of stuffed it away in my, file drawer in the back of my brain. And when I saw this article today, I said, man, I agree 100%. So here's what I want you to do. If you have a moment, walk into an Apple store at 10:30 in the morning on a weekday and see who's there. And I think you'll be surprised. Grandparents, moms, the kids are playing the little computers where they've got themselves to play computer games. But there's definitely not geeks out there like me messing with stuff. So anyway, we'll have a link up to this in the show notes. And they're saying that's the max part of their biggest growing audience. Okay, Mac Office is getting its service pack update. Microsoft releasing the second service pack to update Office 2008 for Mac. And the free update is expected to be available later, or actually sometime this week. It's designed to improve speed and stability, as well as add new features for connecting to SharePoint servers and to Microsoft's Office Live workspace. So I have the link up to that in the show notes. You'll probably be seeing that come in as an auto update, or you can just request the auto update feature. Okay, let me go back here. This thing's jumping all over the place. We talked about that already. All right, let's talk about Japan cell phones. And, you know, I've often said on this show that when I'm visiting my in-laws in Okinawa, that I always get to play around with their cell phones. And I'm just simply amazed. Now, first of all, it's a little tricky because it's all in kanji, so I kind of have to punch my way through to kind of figure stuff out. But their phones have unbelievable amount of apps, unbelievable amount of connectivity. They're quick. They're big. They're not small like the phones we have here. They're usually flip phones, you know, they're with a clamshell type. But they're just, they're amazing. And, you know, they're using these gaudy colors that the Japanese typically have. But, you know, overall, they're quick and they're fast. They can do everything with them. Now, I've always said, how come that technology is stayed in Japan? And I've never really understood it. But there's a good article in New York Times today talking about why Japan cell phones haven't gone global. And they call it the Galapagos syndrome. And it's like they're kind of like stuck to Tokyo and stuck to the mainland. They don't move out because largely the phones, the software is developed independently for each phone. It's not like it transfers from mobile to mobile. You pick up one phone and it operates a little different than the next one. And that's one thing I've always noticed too that's always confused me because I've been on one phone. Like when I rent a phone, it's like I have to learn the phone all over. Here, you pick up somebody's phone, if it's a Nokia, Motorola, whatever it may be, you know, within about 15 seconds, you can make a phone call with it. You know, you can figure out how to get to the phone book and so forth. Not a Japanese phone. They all have different menus and different ways of doing things. And this is part of the problem, is that they've built the phones to do everything, so they're bigger, they're heavier, they use more power, but they also are hardware specific. And so that means a different build for every phone. This is part of the problem, they're saying, why the Japanese cell phones have not made it out of Japan and into other markets. Now, another thing they did was that the Japanese bought into some different type of carrier technology early on that kind of made them completely different than the rest of the world. Now, I find this kind of weird because I can pick up world phones that'll work in Japan, which won't work. That'll work in Japan, but so I don't understand where that issue is. But they are looking now to figure out how they're going to get into the U.S. markets because, quite honestly, the iPhone has taken them by surprise. Even though the iPhone is not as widely used in Japan, most of the people that are running the cell phone companies understand that it's the way of the future. And are looking to definitely make improvements upon it or upon their brands in order to get them out of Japan and into the consumers' pockets here in the United States. Google turned on the moon in Google Earth, so you can check out the moon in Google Earth now. That's available. And actually, there was some links up some websites today. I have that in the show notes talking about some images they took of the Apollo 11 sites, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, as they've released some pictures of the Apollo 11 and Apollo 12 landing sites. You can actually see just this little dot on the ground. They say, well, that's the lunar lander. So I'd like to see this in high def. Wouldn't you like to put something down right beside one of these things and see what it actually looked like now? Of course, a little more space news. The Endeavour, of course, arrived on station at the International Space Station. They got to work. They've had some 13 people on board, and they've had what they term toilet problems. One of the main restrooms on the ISS broke down. I guess they're in work to get that fixed because they're all having to go over to the Russian module to use the restroom. So I thought that was kind of comical. And I think there was actually late word today that something may have gotten fixed. Maybe the lines aren't so long at the restroom. All right, over on Ars Technica, there's an article about a new website that's called Rejecta Mathematica. And this is kind of a cool site. I thought this was a smart idea by someone. There's a new mathematical journal that has an unusual twist. What it does, it only accepts articles that have been have went through peer review and have been rejected. So, you know, normally when you send a paper for a peer review, you know, it goes through a bunch of you know, different committees. People look at it, and, you know, they get a sign-off and approve that the work is sound and, you know, worthy of publishing. But many people, there's just as many that write something up. They said, oh, this is, you know, this is hokey science, or it doesn't fall into what we believe is, you know, good science. And what they do is they reject the paper. So this company says there's value in that. So they only publish documents that have been rejected. Now, the people have to submit their rejection letters as well on why they haven't been published. And people are starting to, of course, the academics are just gone crazy over this. They think this is the worst thing to ever have happened. But there's a lot of interesting science that people say they're finding in there where maybe one person couldn't quite connect the dots to make a case. Other people pick up the work and continue on. So this is pretty cool here. And it's all based on mathematics, advanced mathematics. And definitely something that those are type of papers I do not want to review or being involved in writing after my experiences last weekend. But the site is live, and I'll have the link up to it in the show notes. I think it's pretty cool. And those of you that are math whizzes, I'm sure you guys will enjoy it too. Some rumor on the street, or actually some predictions on the street, that Google Voice may be starting to cause trouble for Skype. And I think the only way Google Voice is going to cause problems for Skype is if they come up with their own web app. If Google comes out with a web app for Google Voice that allows you to make calls directly from the web app and have it go through your Google Voice account, I think that will be big. I think it really, really will. So we'll see what happens with those two competitors. All right, let's talk a little bit about an article on Computer World. And I know I've spent a lot of time today on the iPhone app, or iPhone, but it seems to be in the news a lot. And for any worthy developer out there, matter of fact, I was going to have my team look over this because it's pretty scary. Some of the things that are going on with developers that are actually submitting apps to the App Store. And this is it's a 10-page tale of rejection. And it talks about one individual's tale, or basically his complete story of what he's had to deal with the Apple Store based upon a very simple application. And I look at this and I read it and I think to myself, who in their right mind would put up with this kind of abuse from a company just to get an app in an App Store? But at the same point, I'm thinking to myself, well, you're kind of, you know, You have to, you know, in order to meet expectations for your communities, you almost have to go through this pain. And but it really makes me think that if you're going to be doing a app for the iPhone, you better pay attention to their rules pretty close, because Google holds the golden key to getting an app approved, and you definitely are you're at their demise. And the problem is, though, is that the standards are so varied from, I guess, reviewer to reviewer. And I think once you read through this, and please, you know, take the time to, because it makes you just kind of shake your head saying, how are they going to keep developers happy if they continue to do business the same way that they're doing it right now? Obviously, they're not pouring enough money to it. That's one thing that's fairly obvious, and it looks like Apple needs to get much, much better at that and come out of their doggone shell as well to fix their some of their issues. All right, Microsoft has agreed, as part of their antitrust concerns, that it's going to be letting customers choose their default browser during the install of Windows. As you all know, Microsoft's been under enormous antitrust pressure in Europe about bundling its Internet Explorer software with its Windows operating system, which I think at this point is kind of moot point. Come on, guys, get over it. But in a move where they're going to try to, you know, basically eliminate any of these antitrust issues, they're saying, and this is a quote from Microsoft, IE will never install or become the default browser without your explicit consent. However, we heard a lot of feedback from a lot of different people and groups and decided to make the user choice of the default browser even more explicit. This change is part of our ongoing commitment to user's choice and control. Wow. Big change there by the folks at Microsoft. Now, remember, IE is tied connected closely to the operating system, so we could end up with our hands full when it comes to operating Windows the way you want to run it without IE loaded. I don't see what the big deal is, to be honest with you. It sits on my browser bar and never gets used, but it's there. Looks like that Apple is going to be reporting quarterly Mac sale jumps of 16% in June. It's their one of their largest sales months. They're indicating. We'll see what happens in the sales call here in the next day or two. Okay, there was a app that was submitted. You know, I should have covered this in when I was talking about the iPhone app submission. But Apple actually approved an app that depicted school shootings. And it's a game revolving around going to school and shooting classmates. This is a sick game. It's called Zombie School. And, you know, here they protest folks for, you know, they've got this, people are having their stuff rejected for all these obscure reasons. Yet they approve an app like this initially. And then once people complain about it, then they remove it from the App Store. I'm totally offended. I just don't understand. I really don't understand what's going on over there. Is that company just lost their way or what? Makes you wonder. Orlando Sentinel has a report that the Air Force has said that the new Ares One escape system, which we talked about in the last prior shows, the Air Force is saying, and this is not NASA's opinion, but the Air Force is saying that with the escape system in the very early portions of a launch, in other words, within the first, probably 20 seconds or so before it gets to a mile in altitude, if it had to be engaged, they felt that the chances of survivability of the astronauts was near zero. And basically, based upon shrapnel and of the explosion caused by the solid rocket fuel, and they feel that the survivability of the astronauts would be very low at a low altitude. NASA is contending this, but I'm sure we're going to hear much, much more on this over the coming days. All right, the folks at Dig just cannot seem to keep themselves out of trouble. Dig's attempt to channel more readers through its site has, caused people to get completely upset. They once again changed the Dig bar. Basically, what it was doing was forcing more people to not leave the Dig site, not getting to the actual articles that they want to look at. So there is quite a bit of contention going on amongst the Dig community. Now, there was a tweet from Dig founder who's been on vacation for a couple of weeks, and he wasn't aware of this actual change, and he's going to be looking into it today. So this may be a feature that will quickly go away. But how can you not know if you're the CEO or president of the company, and something like this is, that's a big change. That's something that you would think he would have been involved with, but they're just continue to drive more traffic to their website. That's their main goal. All right, in-flight Wi-Fi. There is some etiquette coming out on actually using in-flight Wi-Fi. And there's a 6 or 7 step process that they're actually hoping people will abide by when they fly. I can tell you, people don't pay attention to nothing when they're flying. They just do whatever they're going to do. On a recent flight that I was on, a guy that was sitting 2 seats over from me, he was actually watching an adult video, trying to shield it from people, but it was just so obvious. Couldn't believe it. But anyway, in-flight Wi-Fi rules. Why would you ever do that on an airplane? I don't get it. So yeah, I'll have this list up in the show notes. You guys can check that out as you will. Tweet me. Tweet me. You guys familiar with this? I feel like I was the last person on the planet to become familiar with it, because today was the first day I logged on to the site. Tweet Meme is a pretty cool site that gives you a basically they're measuring and watching for articles that are being retweeted, and they're bringing those to you in a variety of different categories, and it updates. I subscribed to the RSS feed already, got this on my permanent read list. This is a good one here, folks. Tweet Meme, tweetmeme.com. How many of you have had family members that have suffered with macular degeneration? I know that probably many of you had. I know that in my family we've had that. And I just wish this device would have been available when my grandmother was still alive. But a tiny glass telescope the size of a pea has been successfully implanted in the eyes of people with severely damaged retinas, helping them read, watch television, and better see familiar faces. The new device is for people with irreversible advanced form of macular degeneration, which blind spots develop in the central vision of both eyes. What it does is it basically, it acts just like the any type of regular a telescope. It magnifies, but what they do is they get it far enough into the eye, implanted far enough in the eye that it is beyond where the macular degeneration is happening, and basically provides a gateway for vision, for light and stuff to be seen in. It's pretty cool. This is very interesting, folks. This is cutting edge. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of this. You know, just to think that they can, now it's kind of, it makes me kind of, but imagine this thing's being implanted in the eyeball, and it's just a little telescope. Whoever figured this out, this guy's got some big heads. I'm going to tell you, they really, really do. So I have a link up to that in the show notes. You've got comments tonight, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail is +1 619 342 7365. All right, last couple articles here. Quest is unveiling 40 megs down, 20 megs up via ADSL2. So those of you that are in a Quest area, keep advised, you may be getting much higher broadband speeds available via VDSL2 and ADSL2. So I have this link up. There's press release out. And I don't know exactly, well, actually going to 23 markets, including parts of New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. So good news for those of you that are in service areas being serviced by Quest. Last article of tonight, LaunchWares, TwitCam beats CamTweet to live video tweets. That's a mouthful. I guess the folks over at Justin TV demonstrated a beta where they were going to launch something called CamTweet. And basically, it's just like any other video streaming service, with the only exception is it's tied around your Twitter profile. And everything that people say in the chat is actually retweeted, which I think would be kind of annoying. But the folks at Justin did not get theirs up, but the folks over at Livestream, in other words, the folks that used to be called Mogulist, have launched TwitCam, and you can find that at twitcam.com. So real easy to get up and chatting with people and having a live event as we're doing here on Ustream today. Okay, we're done with the regular content tonight. Let me go ahead and get Winamp loaded so I can actually send it, play the voicemails here today. Had a little problem mid-show. I don't know if those of you that were on the audio portion probably didn't hear it, but we lost video for a little while on Ustream. And I don't know what's going on here. This thing is complaining to me tonight. Why would Winamp do that? It's never caused me problems before. Okay, do you want to... You know I want to cancel that in case you're trying to do something stupid. You know, I've always used Winamp to play the voicemails. But during the intro tonight, I clicked the intro and it like didn't play for a second. But so we'll see what happens here with the voicemails. All right, we're going to go ahead and get into those again. +1 619 342 7365 is the number. Geeknews@gmail.com is the email address. Here comes the first voicemail. Have not previewed these, so we'll see who we got online.
Hey, Todd, it's Ross Craig. I've been listening for quite a while. I was on the road moving from Trenton, Ontario, back to Halifax, Nova Scotia, back in the Navy again. I was listening to some podcasts. There was one about you're talking about download speeds and such. I moved from Ontario getting 10 megabyte down, 640 up, to Halifax where I'm getting 15 down and 1 megabyte up.
Nice.
For BitTorrents, you still can never get good speeds with BitTorrent, I find. But I find now that I'm living here in Halifax, I'm now able to have unlimited download speeds as opposed to back in Ontario where they capped me at 60 gigs for the month for combined up and down. Anything over that would have been $1.25 a gig. So this is a good deal down here in Halifax, and I agree with you about being in the rural area. I was kind of live in the rural area here in Nova Scotia, same way. All I could get was dial-up or that horrible satellite stuff, which is unreliable. So like your government in the United States here in Canada, we have to do something as well for the people who live in the rural area so they can be like everybody else who live in the cities who have great broadband connections. Once again, thanks for the great podcast, and waiting for next week's. Thanks again. Bye.
Hey, thanks for calling in. I'm kind of curious, how has your internet usage changed now that you have essentially unlimited broadband, where they're not metering you? You know, with 60 gigs a month, I'm kind of curious, how did you throttle yourself when you're living in the Toronto area? Now that you're living in Halifax, how did that change? How did your usage change? Are you having a better experience? Are you not worrying about surfing the net? I'm just kind of curious. I'd love to have you call back and let me know, you know, basically how your usage habits have changed and what you're doing now that you didn't do before. And I think this would be a good marker for us because, you know, many of us are facing these, you know, bandwidth caps. If Time Warner comes out with theirs, you know, all of us could be entering bandwidth caps, although they've initially backed off on that for now. I'm sure we're going to see that again. But, you know, you coming from an area where there was caps before, now being unlimited, I'm kind of, you know, I'd like to hear how your change is and how much were you using before, and do you have any idea how much bandwidth you're using now? But thanks for calling, and glad to hear that you're – thanks for being part of the Ohana, longtime listener of the show. And look forward to hearing to you again. Thanks. All right, folks, here comes the next one.
Hey, Todd, this is Jeremy Johnson. I'm calling from Macon, Georgia.
Hey, Jeremy.
I was calling with a question a few months ago, I believe. I had heard you mention something about the wireless internet access that you had at your house, and you had said something. I thought it was an extra box or something that you hooked up that allowed basically free Wi-Fi for anyone around your house. If that wasn't it, if you remember this or if you know what I'm talking about, if you could just mention something about it, I just wanted to look into that. I really appreciate it, and thanks for all you do. Keep up the great work, and we'll be listening to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for the call. We talked about this a little bit on the last show, but there's a device out there, Fonera, F-O-N-E-R-A, and what it is it's a router, it's a wireless router that has two Wi-Fi SSIDs. In other words, when you have in your house, you bring up your Wi-Fi, you see the name of your Wi-Fi router. Well, this one produces two. One is for internal use. In other words, one that you connect to in the house that you have a password for. And the other one's an open Wi-Fi spigot that the neighbors, anyone can connect to that is willing to sign up and put in some information to get access to the actual device. That is by Fonera. And how I run that is I have two connections here at the house. I have my cable connection through Time Warner. Then I have a backup connection through Clearwire. I basically run the Clearwire connection to watch my video stream to make sure that the video stream is running good. Matter of fact, I didn't have it turned on today is why I missed that the video stream went down for a few minutes. But that I have the Fonera router hooked to. And essentially, it doesn't give people much bandwidth, but if they want to get email, it's not even – and the reason I have it on that particular connection itself is that the bandwidth is limited enough that I'm not worried about people doing, like, big downloads or maybe accessing stuff that maybe they shouldn't. But there's a way you can check how much usage is going on to it, and it really doesn't get used that much. Once in a while, I'll see someone connect to it. But it's Fonera, F-O-N-E-R-A. Is the name of the website, and they've got a new device right now that you can order online and actually get delivered to you. And basically, all you do is you agree to put up a Wi-Fi hotspot, and that's really the deal here. Okay, got an email from Tony. Hey, Todd, here's a link to a geek poster that the Ohana might like, and I'll have that link up in the show notes. And you're right, Tony, that was a pretty cool poster. I'm sure everyone will get a kick out of it. Got an email from Jake. He says, hey, Todd, your last newsletter went into my Gmail spam folder for some reason. I thought it was especially odd since you use Google Groups for it. Oh, well, just thought I'd let you know, Jake. Hey, if anyone else has seen that happen, let me know. And just remember, part of the challenge with putting out any newsletter, especially the show notes newsletter, it's full of hyperlinks. I've got you know, on any given show, maybe 30 articles that I've covered, and they're all listed in there with one-liners with a hyperlink. Now, depending upon how Google or other email clients treat that email, they could very well say, hey, this looks really odd. And it does. It looks odd for an email to come through with as many hyperlinks. So I'm not surprised that they get flagged from time to time. All you really need to do to solve this is in Google, if you're getting your email via Gmail, go into the contact system, add the email that comes from Google Groups, the GNC announce email address. You just copy it out of the email and put that in the contacts folder. You'll never have it go into spam again, because Google will basically say, oh, that's in his contacts folder. That must be a real one. And that's kind of one way to override it if you're a Gmail user. Got an email from Trucker Tom talking about 2010, a new space odyssey beckons. This weekend, of course, lots of news about Apollo. And, of course, Trucker Tom has got some good links here for me. So I'll have this link up in the show notes for you. It talks about the 13 people on the ISS. Also got an email from Trucker Tom talking about the flooded toilet in orbit. You know, if you really think about that, flooded toilets in your house is bad enough, but a flooded toilet in orbit, oh, that is just so wrong. It it really, really is. I got an email from Frank. He says, hey, Todd, getting burned by blowing through your plan's limit. Now, this is talking about texting. He says, getting burned by blowing through your plan's limit is old news in the wireless world, where Sprint ads once popularized the phrase ugly overages. But what astounds the Orland electronics technician, this is some guy that has a went over on his text. He says he wanted to adjust before he got burned again. So he requested an itemized bill just for 1 month. No need for paper. An electronic version would do. Sprint's answer was no. So this is basically talking about people trying to figure out how much usage they're using on text and get an itemized bill on what's being used. And a Sprint would not respond by giving an itemized bill on his actual text messages. And I guess I can kind of understand that, because his bill would probably have been an inch thick. You remember some of the first AT&T bills that were coming for iPhone users? You know, they're like an inch thick. They were being sent by FedEx because they were so heavy. So we'll see what happens with this. But, you know, just get the unlimited plan. If you're using that much text, that'll save you, you know, $1,000 in overage cost. Got a couple of emails here from Bo. And Bo is in Sweden. He says, I'm using a triple EPC 901. It runs better. It runs Ubuntu Notebook Remix 9.04, and my mobile operator is 3. I am at Oliver Twist, a beer bar in central Stockholm, drinking Dale's Pale Ale from Oscar Blues in Colorado, U.S. in a can. Good beer. And he sends me a link to his speed test results. Now, he's in a bar on Wi-Fi, 6.04 megabits down, 0.77 megabits up. Now, just to rub it in a little bit further, now this is, you know, this, well, that was his mobile speed test, okay? Now, he's, his home system, he sent me another speed test result. He said, hey, Todd, this is, you know, this is my average. His ISP download speed, hold on to your hats, folks, because I've never seen numbers like this. 87.03 megs down, 16.85 megs up. It's out of, and he's basically in Stockholm. You know, we are so slow here in the United States with internet speeds. Now, he sent me one more. What was the next one? Yeah, same numbers. Doesn't it just drive you crazy? Enjoy it, Bo. Enjoy the speed. I am insanely jealous. That's just crazy. Crazy numbers. Love to have the same speed as well. All right, got an email from, this is, I don't know if this came from a listener or not, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. It's from John. He says, hey, Todd, I'm asking you basically for your support. I play a game called ERPublic, E-R-E-P-U-B-L-I-K, E-R-E-P-U-B-L-I-K. ERPublic is, in essence, a real-life simulator. You can run for Congress, become president. He said, that's me. Run. I guess he actually is the president of this game. Run the military, etc. However, right now, America's taking over. Long story short, we're trying to get a baby boom in our country. Any mentions from your notable news source will help a lot, and I love reading your blog. A few stats about Air Republic. It's kind of a weird name for a game, but anyway, if you guys are interested in role-playing games online, this might be an interesting one. E-R-E-P-U-B-L-I-K. Currently about 17,000 people playing in the United States, it looks like. Okay, I think that's it, folks, for content. We're long here tonight, hour 19 already. I want to thank you all for your emails. If I miss some, I'll get back to those on the next show. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is +1-619-342-7365. And for those of you that are on Ustream, I'll hang out a little bit here after the show and chat with you guys and look through the chat. Haven't been able to do that. Be back with you for another day show on Thursday. We're going to do this twice this week, okay? So two day shows this week. So if you didn't catch it today, you're definitely going to want to tune in approximately around 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when I'm going to try to come online. But it's been my pleasure to bring you the show today, and I hope that all of you that have gotten it, of course, via podcast download, enjoy it as well. Thanks for hanging through our little technical issues today as well. Again, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline, +1-619-342-7365. Everyone have a great week. We'll see you on Thursday. Again, Thursday for the next live show, release of the podcast Friday morning. Take care, and aloha.